Good evening. I'm Engelbert. I'm suspect I'm here as in Kingston. We now have a political economy research group, and we have recently, a few years ago, started a master in political economy that is recruiting healthily in the meantime. We also have started to reform our undergrad program. That is proving a bit more difficult. It's affecting our core undergrad program versus the political economy master was sort of a niche program, and that was a bit easier to get through. We are also organizing various events around it. For example, the next 3 days, we have a three-day summer school introduction to post-Keynesian economics and political economy. I suspect that's why I was invited to talk tonight. But my challenge will be to say in new words what the speakers before me have already said, so let me give it a try. The first is, the first point I want to make is coming back to Michael's introduction, the fact that we had a major economic crisis a few years back, so bad that even Her Majesty the Queen of the United Kingdom noticed that something was wrong in England. So the question is, does that change anything in economics? Well, let me bring you the good news. No. Mainstream has not reacted at all and is very safely in his seat. I think that is most clearest when you look at the economic section of the REF 2014, which has, I think, 26 universities in there. And I am fairly confident to say there's not a single heterodox economist in the economics part of the REF anymore. So in a way, they have managed to send us into exile. Theresa yesterday used the term suburbs, which I think means the same to what I mean by exile, but suburbs sounds more a bit more comfortable, so maybe we should stick with suburbs. So we're in the suburbs. And if you think of Manchester, where there was a very energetic, extremely well-organized student movement that produced a brilliant document criticizing the curriculum in Manchester, essentially the economics department didn't even ignore it. I mean, that's how firm they are. So actually, no, there's no. It went the other way, and they fired the one heterodox person, and I'm delighted to say that Yilmaz Devrim is now at Kingston. So that's the suburbs part of it. So
they gave Terry Peach a job. Terry Peach was told to satisfy all the
plural students. So the statement that the mainstream has won that battle is not so much meant as whining as a statement of fact. Yeah? I mean, we lost that one. That was the worst economic crisis for 2 decades, and they don't have to even react to it. That's in a way very impressive. And in a way, we are living through an age of a reignited neoliberalism. Now, the good news is that neoliberalism is a mess. In the sense that it produces crisis, it produces social tensions, and in the post-crisis, the post-crash neoliberalism, it sort of has a lot more conflict and disagreement and a lot less hegemony in it than the previous version. Once the happy time of the property bubble is gone, it's just a lot less attractive to people. Now, not so nice part of that, I guess we do see in the Brexit vote that comes out in all sorts of unexpected and in a way the ways that don't direct the energy very usefully. But I think that's the world we're living in. And that means there's potentially a lot of constituency out there for heterodox or pluralist economics. And we have to think about ways of connecting to that. Neoliberalism is a mess also in the sense that what neoliberalism will be doing or is in the process of doing with university is creating a big mess. That's the commercialization of universities, the introduction of fees, and various steps of introducing pseudo-market mechanisms into the education system. There are pseudo-market mechanisms because you can't properly have a market. Now, we've seen that when they the first round when they said, well, everyone is free to set their tuition fees up to 9,000. Of course, because we have a well-informed market, the universities will line up according to their quality in the whole spectrum of possible prices, which of course they didn't do. This is not a sector where you can have a market where the price actually signals the quality properly and where you can readily have bad institutions going in bankruptcy and shutting down. That would devalue the degrees that thousands of previous students have. Yeah, so these are pseudo-markets, and it will create a big mess. It's also clear that the TEF will create a big mess. Now we're having a teaching excellence framework, and we're really caring about teaching, except for the way that we are teaching is we are asking the students some questions about how satisfied they are. Miraculously, the Oxbridge universities are getting out on top of that. And then there are some standardized key information system indicators, I think they were called, data about employability and student-staff ratios, and that's the teaching quality. In other words, it's not seriously about engaging with students. But the fact that it creates a mess and that it will overall damage universities in a way also means that in that process of breaking up, there will be all sorts of niches, of contradictions, where we have to try to get our feet and hand into the system. I do think it's particularly important to realize that universities, while they have become quite nasty creatures, are not homogeneous players. They are not agents that are in agreement with themselves. There's different departments, there's deans, there's the international office and so on. And those have different interests. And if you think about what has happened at the universities where the students applied pressures, it was essentially the econ departments that blocked it and that managed to block it. Once you get the level higher, once you go to the faculty high up, those senior management tend to, by and large, understand that there's something fishy in economics. But then again, as long as they bring money in terms of research grants, as long as they do well in the REF, it doesn't really pay to create the mess with them. So in other words, and I presume that's directed at the students, what that means is one has to increase the price of not reacting to these demands. I mean, when the Post-Crash Society in Manchester managed to get the attraction of the major newspapers, it was clear that the higher levels of the universities did communicate with the department and did encourage them to think about whether they are, not my knowledge, but my improvisation, some cheap way of satisfying them. The department didn't want to go that route, but that means that we didn't manage to increase the price enough for not going down that route. And again, there's very different interests in the universities, and ultimately what we have to do is find sort of the entry points where we can put the levers to break up that monolithic block. And that was essentially how we got the master's program in political economy at Kingston. The department at that time wasn't particularly eager to do that, but I found to present it in a way that it wouldn't have big effects on the rest of the department. And once it was up at the faculty level, it actually there was substantial support for creating, and I could also change the wording to alternative for heterodox economics. Yeah. The final point that I want to make is essentially reminding ourselves of the late Fred Lee. I don't quite remember which university was it when he made that speech. It did already involve the conference dinner and a glass of wine and so. But the short version of it was, Fred was asked, well, what should heterodox economists do? And what he said, he's a committed trade unionist, was organize, organize, organize. And I think ultimately, Fred is right in that point. We have to organize in the sense that we need to create more critical masses. I mean, the Cambridge Journal obviously is one of the institutions in the sense that it's a three-star journal that is very important for us, but we need more networks and we need more masses. We need to cooperate as heterodox economists, I don't think that we are fully playing by the strength of our numbers. If you think of how ecological economics, which in a way is much more diverse as a group in terms of the interests, the methodologies, they have huge conferences, and the Ecological Economics Journal is a league above the CGE in terms of citation. If you think what the Society for the Advancement of Socioeconomics, SASE, has done, which also has huge conferences, and has managed to use that momentum of the big conferences to create the journal, the Socioeconomic Review, which is now a three-star journal in politics. Again, if you look at their impact factors, they are in order of magnitude above what we as heterodox economists can do. So I do think there's definite advantages and potential in further cooperation. And the final point I want to make is we have to think more systematically on how we can move, cooperate with players outside the universities. If we are against the wall within the universities, and that is effectively what we are, in most economics departments we are marginalized, it's in the suburbs that sometimes we get a bit bigger, then we have to think about what is out there that is not at universities. And if you think back both to what the neoliberals did, I mean, they originally, other than Chicago, didn't get in universities. They built other infrastructure. They built think tanks. They built the Mont Pelerin Society. If you think of radical economics 100 years ago, Rosa Luxemburg and Rudolf Hilferding were at the Social Democratic Party School before the First World War. They were not at universities. I mean, it's a bit perverse that at a time when half of the population goes to university, the higher education sector is a lot bigger than it was at 1900. We have to think along these ways. But knowledge is produced in all sorts of places. And if the university or the economics departments of universities are a hostile place to produce that sort of knowledge, then we have to think of other places to produce it and to regenerate it.